My first guest this morning is Tom Larson. Boy, it's a loud morning here in the cafe. My first guest this morning is Tom Larson, author of The Sanctuary of Illness, a memoir of heart disease. And I hope you'll stay tuned for the second segment when my guest will be Issa Niafaga, a longtime human rights activist and artist who works to improve the lives of people in his of the people of his hometown, an isolated village in Cameroon. Welcome, Tom. So glad to have you here this morning.
Good morning, Hollis. Thanks to KSFR and the Radio Cafe for having me back again.
Yeah, you have a long history with Santa Fe, don't you?
Yes, goes back some 40 years ago when I lived here. Was a music critic for the Santa Fe New Mexican for a while, and moved to California because that's where the money is.
Yes.
But in the last 10, 15 years, my partner and I come back 3-4 months a year.
Nice. So we're really glad you're here right now.
Yes.
So in reading this book, I was struck by the fact that you are a memoirist. You've written memoirs before.
Mm-hmm.
You teach memoir writing.
Yes.
But I was struck by the fact that this is the kind of book that if you had not previously written a memoir, do you think you would have written about your illness?
If I'd not written previously, well, yeah, it took a big leap to get this book going. After all, you know, most writers believe that whatever happens to us is material that someday has to worm its way into our work. And I knew, there's a chapter later in the book in which I talk about how sort of the discovery of writing about an illness would really help me move through it. I don't know about heal or recover, but there was really a relationship for me between writing and finding out why I wasn't getting better and having these series of heart attacks. And the writing helped me understand that. I don't think the writing healed it, but it certainly helped me understand.
Yeah, you explain, and actually the foreword of the book, you dedicate the book in part to your father and your brother, both of whom died of heart disease very young, your father at 61 and your older brother Steve at 42.
Yeah.
So was this something, having heart disease, having heart attacks, was it something you felt was inevitable for you?
I wish I had felt that, because as I open the book, I'm suddenly hit with this terrible angina, and I sort of don't recognize it for what it is. Mm. I should have known. I was 56 at the time, and I should have known that you know, I do have something inherited. You know, I was overweight. I was stressed. I was my diet. I was a vegetarian, but my diet was far too heavy with dairy. And I should have seen it coming, because both of them had really been hit hard with heart disease, and then suffered for a long time, and then were hit again and died from second heart attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I don't know, the ability of the human mind to deny the historical reality,
right,
in a family is among its, you know, most deepest phenomena.
Yes, and it's also a compensatory mechanism. I mean, if we stayed mired in thinking about what was going to happen to us or might happen to us soon,
mm-hmm,
especially because of genetics or environment,
yeah,
we might do nothing. We might, you know, be overwhelmed by the sheer anxiety of waiting for that moment to occur.
Well, people who have genetic heart disease are inevitably going to have these heart problems,
mm-hmm,
and that's the big surprise. 1 out of 12. Have heart disease and will have some form of heart attack, and it really is a question of when.
Yeah. This is a very personal memoir, and you know, you can write a memoir about events that happened and feelings you had even without truly becoming vulnerable or talking about what really happened, you know, the story underneath the story. And you do a very good job of doing that in this book. I want to ask you to read a little excerpt,
yeah,
so listeners can get an idea about what the sanctuary of illness
is about. Well, I'm going to read from a very short passage in the toward the beginning of the book. And just to explain, it's a short book. It's only about 40,000 words. And I open with the first heart attack while I'm teaching. I try to deny it. I can't. It just overwhelms me. I jump in my car. I drive to the hospital, which is blessedly 1 mile away. I don't advocate that you drive yourself, but I got there before an ambulance could have gotten me there. And they pull me in. I'm into the emergency room. I keep saying, I'm having a heart attack. And sure enough, this doctor comes in and he says, you're right, Mr. Larson, you're having a heart attack. So right before this moment, they ask me who to call. And I tell them to call my partner, who's just 5 minutes away. So this is a short little chapter called I'm Sorry. Is it then that the nurse asks the mandatory questions? My name, my address, my date of birth, my cardiac history? Do I say father, brother, both dead? Of heart attacks? Of the less volatile heart disease? My symptoms, I'm dizzy, I'm hot, my chest aches. Have you ever had angina before? A sudden name for the pain that keeps washing through me. Does she lean over next, the admitting nurse, and smirk a tad wickedly and say, please try and relax, and I laugh. Does it happen a minute later that she rifles a medical bag for aspirin and a sublingual nitroglycerin tablet and asks almost like an afterthought who to phone, and I say, Susanna? While I wait, harried and calmed by the theatrical flurry, the pinging machines, the seismic readouts, you appear, curtain parting and padding your way up to the bed where I lie and where, on your face, I see two women, you who are unafraid to approach me, indeed desire my trouble, and you who are shocked to come any closer. To both of you, I say, I'm sorry. Don't be, you reply. But I am. What for? Good question. I'm sorry that this dread wants you, as well as me, to bear it.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
That was Tom Larson. I'm talking with him about his book, The Sanctuary of Illness, A Memoir of Heart Disease, if you've just joined us. I was struck in that segment, that excerpt that you just read, when you said, I'm sorry, that when people are facing a life-threatening moment, when their lives are in danger or they feel that they might die, one of the things that people often want to say to those they love is, I'm sorry. Meaning not just, I'm sorry that I'm having this heart attack and it's really terribly inconvenient for you and you may be frightened, but were you saying I'm sorry in a bigger sense, do you think?
Well, I think because of our closeness, because of our relationship, I really was saying that I know that not only do I have to bear this, but you do too, because that's the nature of her, that's her nature, and it is the only way our relationship could deal with it. We either would, bring it in and subsume it in the relationship, or things like this break people apart. But I knew because we had this strength. I didn't know how deep it would go into our relationship, but I knew that. The pair of us could sort of magnetize the illness in a way that would result in this kind of relational suffering. And it's the relational suffering that I think is really the definition of a disease, especially if you have, and most people do, these strong primary, perhaps unresolved relationships with children, with parents, with siblings, and so on. And the literature of disease and illness shows us just how much the sufferer finds that this is the true course of events, that their life takes over. It's not just medical treatments and drugs and stents and surgeries. It is that there's a brand new level of closeness or distance, and the dance between the two that occurs to people with illness.
Yes, in part of my work, I'm a chaplain, and I've seen that very literally borne out in the room with the patient, and it's always very interesting where the various family members are standing.
Yeah.
And some people, no matter how much they love the person in the bed, are backed up against the wall in a corner because they just can't be close to what is happening, and others are right there on the bed.
That's
powerful. Practically in the bed with the patient.
Yeah, it's as though the disease is the film director of exactly. the scene and sets yes. it up, and people disperse.
Right.
They come to the film or they come to the photograph and put their bodies into it in the way that organizes the theme of the of the condition. It's fascinating how people do that.
Yeah. It tells the story for you.
Yeah.
I do want to ask you about your partner.
Yeah.
As I read the book, there's a lot of information. You spend a lot of time talking about Susanna and your relationship, and there are two explicit sex scenes in the book. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wondered is she just inured to the fact that you're always going to be writing in part about your relationship, or how do you work that out with her?
I'm glad you mentioned the explicit sex scenes. I'm sure that's going to help sales and also my appearance at Collected Works. I'm blessed to have a person like this who sees that the totality of our relationship is really what I was after. In terms of sex, it's very interesting that men who have heart disease can often be impotent, and this is sort of a secret thing that men don't talk about, and certainly this was true of my father and my older brother, and then I started experiencing these things. So it's not gratuitous.
Explicit. And I didn't mean to suggest that.
Not that. But it's a very good point because, she's my partner, my lover, my editor, a person who sort of read and proofed all of the discussions and so on. And she said, this is how I remember what we said at that particular time. So I'm integrating both of our points of view in this, and she was fine with that. She was fine. She thought either the sexuality or would really balance some of the heavier things, some of the things that we said and feared that came out in Jungian analysis, for example, or just this fact that she has a grandson and a son, both of whom have life-threatening illnesses, that here's a third male in her life who is going to suffer. So, we were both conscious of trying to give the book, sort of levity and lessen the heavier strains by moving it in and out of this wonderful thing about intimacy. And just quickly, intimacy is not just... it's not just sexual, it's not just physical, it is, there's an intimacy to what we believe about each other, what we deny about each other, what we don't want to tell each other, no matter how close we are. If anything, this is a book that really explores two people's 25-year intimacy together.
Yes, I would agree with you
in that
estimation. And I did want to mention that Tom is going to be reading from his book at Collected Works on Thursday night, April 17th at 6 p.m.
Correct.
So you can hear more about it then. One of the issues you address, and I think this is true for almost all serious illness. We watch so much in films and TV, and we get these ideas that, you have a medical crisis, you go in, you get surgery, maybe a little chemo, something like that, you come out, you're done. You're good to go for another 20 years or something.
Yeah.
And you have had to confront the fact that this was not a one-time occurrence. This was a new... companion in your life, if you will.
Yeah, and this is the sanctuary. This is what I use that word for, and I'm purposely pushing the paradox of it, that a sanctuary would be a place of safety and protection, which you go into. And this is the fact of contemporary medicine, where you are, in a sense, fixed. The drugs, the stents, the treatments, the care, both from cardiology departments or loved ones, from family, from partners, is phenomenal. Our society is organized around this sort of fire engine to the to the fire, to the event that we want to help heal immediately. So you come out of the hospital, and I did the same. I was writing a great deal at the time. The thing I noticed immediately, 2 weeks after, I was writing more than I ever did. I was so happy to be alive and feeling like I'd escaped the bullet. Well, no, there were more bullets in the chamber of the gun, and they came at me. They were less severe, the second and third heart attacks, but the irony was that I wasn't getting better. I was still having heart attacks. I thought the stents would save me. So then I had to understand that I needed to do more medically. I needed to do more with my diet. I needed to find stress reduction. And I ultimately needed to integrate the disease into the relationship before I would really get somewhere. I mean, of course, it's my memoir is a vegan memoir because I've been a vegan for 3 years, and I think that has really, eating just plants has really helped my internal system. But that's just the body's diet. That's not the totality of the disease. So, just quickly about the sanctuary, you can be protected, but in the protection, you're sort of lulled into this false sense that you're okay.
Right.
And who doesn't want to be okay?
Of course.
You know, when you feel good, you're what I say, you're inextinguishably alive. You can't not feel good. I can't just rush back and think, well, maybe I should be suffering more with angina. And I'm not suffering with angina. But when it came back, I knew it in an instant. I knew what to do. The disease is a great teacher in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a new career all in
mm-hmm.
itself, almost.
Indeed.
Because there is so much you have to learn. You know, you talked about doing studying so much, and
yes.
In the book you actually include a lot of statistics and information about heart disease, which I think was very generous of you. You might have stayed quite focused on yourself, but you're also offering the reader some very valuable information about heart disease that many of us are not going to, you know, go jump online and just read fun articles about heart disease.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's another interesting aspect that it was unexpected in your book to me, and that was you talked about old issues, past things that had happened in your life, suddenly bubbling up again, and how you thought, wait a minute, I dealt with this issue, that's over, and you used the phrase, you said you were grieving what you call the waste of those years. Can you tell the listeners a little more about that?
Boy, the waste of those years. Well, I think the power of an illness is that not only do you confront your mortality, but it brings up something that I never thought I would experience, and that is regret. And the regret was in part for not being more aware of my body, but it was also getting involved in either relationships with an ex-partner. Things that had to do with my children, even elements in my relationship with my brother and father and mother, all of whom had some form of heart ailment. And what I regretted was, you know, I wished at 21 I would have realized that I was in for the you know, I'd gotten the heart, the dice had been thrown, and I got the heart card. And I wish I would have known that, because I think I wasted a lot of time thinking that my particular difficulties in life, especially with relationships, had to do with the other. They really had to do with me and what I was denying.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of, a disease is about one's comeuppance with the past. And for a memoirist, for a writer, you cannot get away from the past. I'm, after all, the one who limps the limp in the family. I was chosen as the observer, the witness who noticed everything and wrote it down. This
uh-huh.
is 40, 45 years of journal taking.
Yes.
So all of that material, this is the peril of being a writer, especially a memoirist, all that material is ever present in me. It's not in the past. I'm always carrying it. So an illness just says, here's an opening where the past and the present coexist. And that's why it's an essential part of the book to get me to a kind of present awareness where I am aware of what's happening and I'm starting to heal because I'm in the moment. I'm not lost in the writing. I'm not lost in the past.
Right.
Resolution. I had the illness gave me the vehicle to resolve these things in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom. I'm also curious about the internal tension that you're holding now. Some time has passed. When did you have the first heart attack?
It was 06.
06. And you had two subsequent
events. Two subsequent at 2.5 year intervals. So I'm 3 years beyond
having
the
your
third.
Last.
Yeah.
And so how do you hold that tension in your daily life?
Every once in a while I have a day in which I go, oh crap, here it comes. And it's usually indigestion.
Yes.
Or it's stress or nervousness from something, anxiety. And I'm able to know the difference. I really do know the difference between angina and stress. These things flow together in a way that they enjoy masking each other. The anxiety that anyone can suffer is very close to the anxiety of angina.
Uh-huh.
But angina will speak and shout very loudly, right, when it actually comes. So yeah, you're right, there is internal tension. But on the other hand, if I don't feel that, then I go back to, and fear it in a sense, I go back to that la-di-da, laissez-faire feeling,
yes,
I had either before or between the heart attacks. And that's the thing that really got me in trouble. It's the lack of awareness that is the disease that you're really diseased with.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the psychological component of a physical illness.
You fall into unconsciousness again.
Exactly.
About the disease.
Exactly.
And yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. We've been talking with Tom Larson. He's the author of The Sanctuary of Illness, a memoir of heart disease. Tom is going to be reading from his book Thursday night, April 17th, at Collected Works downtown at 6 p.m. So thank you so much for being with me, Tom.
You're welcome. I've enjoyed it.
We're going to take a break. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.